Thank you. So I should start with the classical phrase, and now for something completely different, right? So I'm going to concentrate on the McDonald's operators and give you some background on them, which is mainly algebraic. So you can view this talk as a sort of random walk through various algebras. And the connection to the main theme of this conference is, of course, that these McDonald's operators have proved very useful and very central in the study of those McDonald's processes and such, like QTSEP and others. And we will see various manifestations of them, and in particular in some particle problems that we were actually not really interested in the beginning, but discovered were actually related to the kind of problems we were trying to answer. And the questions we were trying to answer, I hid them in there quite far because I want to give you the background first. And it's really a combinatorial representation theory. It has to do with trying to understand details in how the representation theory of quantum spin chain is working. Okay, so but we'll come to that. So I'll start with this general theory of McDonald operators from a kind of modern point of view, which is called the double affine Hecker algebras. And so I'll get started with the definition of those double affine Hecker algebras. So you will have three families of generators and relations between them. Okay, so the first family of generator and the first line here is very familiar to you. It's just Braid group relations. Okay, and then you add up some quadratic relation, which deforms the standard relation T squared equals one for the symmetric group. Okay, so all the algebras I'm going to define here are related to AR, to SLR plus one, but there are, of course, such guys for all types. Okay, but it's simpler to do it this way. Then another set of variables, which you can think of as position variables. Okay, so these are like permutations, deformed permutations. Here, position variables, which have certain commutation relations with these permutation operators. And then momentum variables, okay, so which look pretty similar with respect to this first set of parameter action. And then relations between them, which is really the heart and the juice inside this double affine Hecker algebra, and the reason why they are called double affine. So these relations also connect the momenta and positions to the T's. But here is really the crucial relation, which is something like a defect of commutation between the X's and the Y's via the T. Okay, you can think of it in this way. All right, and here the affine aspect, which is that if I take a non-local product of position operators, it has some fancy commutations with every momentum operator and vice versa. Okay, so this is pretty abstract, and so I've chosen to actually forget completely about this and present you pictures instead. Okay, so I must say that one of the great successes of double affine Hecker algebra is not only make this theory of McDonald operators much more transparent, but it's also to give access to refined knot invariants. Okay, and so these pictures will have everything to do with this knot theory underlying the algebra. So we start with a solid torus. So here is one picture of a solid torus. So you have a piece of soap, right? And then you identify left and right, and back and front and back, right? So this is now, my soap has a toroidal shape, but it's thick. It's thick, right? The thickness is what's between these two open edges, right? So you can view it as just a tube, right? An inside and outside of the tube. So now, my generators, I will represent some sort of link operators that go from the top to the bottom open, that is from the outside to the inside of my tube. Okay? So now, how do I multiply two generators? Well, I have to take one tube for one generator, another tube for another generator, which I stick inside the first tube. So you can actually do this with tubes, but then you have to glue them, right? So you do some sort of genus one matryoshka, right? It's Russian dolls. but of genus 1 now. I checked, you can actually build them, but it's kind of fun. All right, so now here are the generators. First, the T's. So the T's are going to connect a family of R plus 1 points from the top to R plus 1 point from the bottom, or from the outside of a tube to the inside of a tube, in a way that just crosses two links at position I and I plus 1. So that's my TI. And you see that the crossing is overcrossing here and undercrossing there. And so these are TI and TI inverse. And if I concatenate them, of course, TI times TI inverse just does a crossing, undoes it, so therefore it's the identity, okay? And the braid relations are clear between these, just concatenating three of those, and you just pull the strings, okay? Now, more interesting, what are the Y's? Do I start with the Y's? Yes, I start with the Y's. So the Y's are going to be operators which, again, act locally on the I position differently from everywhere else. So everywhere else, you can think of it as the identity. But it's going to connect I to I through one of the cycles of the torus, okay? Say the A cycle, okay? And Y inverse is like this, okay? Now the X's do the same, but with the B cycles. So from the front to the back, right? You go from I to I, but you go through the back, okay? And so now, my claim is that if you concatenate any of those generators, all the relations I was showing you before are completely pictorial and obtained by just pulling strings. Okay, so let's look at this relation, for instance, TI, XI, TI. Okay, so I put my TI here, my XI there, my TI here, now I pull the strings. And it's clear that by pulling the strings, I have transported everything happening at I to I plus 1. Right? So it's XI plus 1. Okay, more interesting, the tricky relation between X and Y, which you can actually rewrite conveniently in this way. So Y2 inverse, X1, Y2, X1 inverse, so it's like a group commutator between these generators, equals T1 squared. So these are the four pictures, right, of a Y2 inverse, X1, Y2, X1 inverse, right? The Y2s connect left-right, the X1s connect front-back, okay? All right, so now how are we going to compute this guy? Well, we remember, of course, that we're working on a torus, that everything that happens on the front is identified with what's on the back. So for instance, this point and this point, they're connected via the inside of my intricated tori. And so there is also a connection between these two points as well, okay? So then you can pull the strings. So it's a little bit of a, you know, experiment, right? You pull the strings in your mind, and you will find this guy, which is twice rotated, so it's T squared, huh? It's not the identity, okay? So this is one of those relations, and this is the most important relation. Okay, so I think I hope I convinced you that this algebra, kind of abstract, can be used to actually generate some interesting refined, not polynomial invariants, okay? So then let's go into the MacDonald theory of MacDonald operators, essentially due to Cherednik, okay? So there is a very interesting representation of this double affine Hecker algebra, which is actually using the position variables as the basic vector space, and this basic vector space will be that of symmetric polynomials in those variables. So the name is actually called spherical Dahar because we are restricting ourselves to symmetric polynomials. Okay, so the T's are given by some explicit relation that involves the X's, and so you can think of them as divided difference operators acting on polynomials, right? So S is just the interchange of the variables XI and XI plus 1. Okay, so acting on a function, it means that you interchange xi and xi plus 1 in your function, minus the original function, divided by xi minus xi plus 1. As we are dealing with polynomials, this remains a polynomial of degree 1 less, but of course you remultiply by xi, so you preserve the degree. So these are degree-preserving difference operators acting on the polynomials. And they satisfy all the good relations. So you can introduce an operator pi, which is just the rotation along the B cycle of my torus with this kind of property. And the affine property is just the fact that the last rotation when you go back to your first variables, you pick up some factor q, and then the y's can also be expressed entirely in terms of this pi rotation and this generator. So in principle, I have everybody expressed now as different operators acting on the space of symmetric polynomials. Okay, so what are the MacDonald operators? They are a very simple object. They are just the elementary symmetric functions of the y variables. So alpha is just the order, right? So it's product of alpha collections of distinct such variables. And in this representation, the theorem is that in this representation, it takes this form. And this is the form, I guess, you're all familiar with, which is just a sum over all alpha element subsets of my set of variables, product over I in the subset and J not in the subset of such divided differences. These Z's should be X's. And DI is just the operator that shifts the I variable by Q, multiplying by Q. Okay? So it's now it's a difference operator acting on polynomials of X's. So the reason why it still acts well on polynomials and transforms them into polynomials is that all these denominators are actually canceled by the linear combination of shifts that you've made. Just like before, we had a divided difference operator which preserved the degree. Okay, so we have these MacDonald operators, and what are they good for? Well, they're good for defining the MacDonald polynomials as the unique set of polynomials which are their common eigenvectors. So common eigenvectors of all those operators, alpha goes from 1 to r plus 1, are given by the MacDonald polynomials. This is the eigenvalue. And you need simply to have some sort of notion of monic polynomial, so they must be normalized in certain ways. So these polynomials, usually there's a Q and a T, right? And there was a Q and a T in my original algebra. Let me show it again. Okay, so the T to the 1/2 is this theta variable, and Q is the variable which is involved when you go around A cycles or B cycles of the torus. Okay, so here it is. I have my MacDonald polynomials. Okay, so now within this framework, we were able to construct new operators which are as follows. So it's a theorem definition, if you want. You introduce new variables y, which are almost conjugates of the old variables y, but not quite, because here the left guy is not exactly the same as the right guy, so you multiply by a bunch of position variables, but you have an imbalance between the two terms, and this is power n. So for each n fixed, the theorem is that all these guys commute with each other. Of course, in the previous setting, the x's, the positions commuted with each other, the momenta commuted with each other, but there were these nasty relations between both. Here, the same thing is happening with this sort of higher order y operators. And you can ask the same question, what are the elementary symmetric functions of those guys in the polynomial representation? So I call them d alpha n qt, so there's an n now involved, right, this n here. And quite remarkably, this is the formula. So this is just the same formula as for the MacDonald operators, but you have an excitation, right, which is this insertion of the product of x variables, these are x's, of x variables in over all the indices in the alpha element subsets over which you sum. So instead of preserving the degree now, this acts again on symmetric polynomials, but instead of preserving the degree, it adds n times alpha to the degree, right? Because there are alpha variables. Okay, so you can ask the question, where does this come from? So we actually stumbled upon these operators from a completely different place, but we figured actually that these operators have a very deep meaning in the double affine Hecker algebra, and here it is. It's because there is an SL2Z action on this double affine Hecker algebra, which is not a surprise. There's a toroidal setting, right? So you expect to have an SL2Z action, right? The, acting on the homologies around the A and B cycles. Okay? And so here it is. You just define a notion of Gaussian, here, out of thinking of x variables as q to the x, then this Gaussian is q to the x squared over 2. Okay? So if you really want to write it down in terms of big X, you have to use logs. Okay? But I think this way of writing things is nicer. And so you can do the same with the Y variables. Okay? So you have two Gaussians here, the Gaussians in X and the Gaussian in Y. And now you can start acting on generators of the algebra by conjugation. So you have an adjoint action with gamma and with nabla here, okay, which actually generate the SL2Z action. And here are actually the SL2Z matrices that correspond to this action. Okay, so the relation satisfied by these two conjugations are exactly the relation satisfied by these two matrices in SL2Z. Okay, so and now, here is an explanation of our new excited MacDonald operator. It's actually the iterated adjoint action of the position Gaussian operator here. So you start from your usual favorite MacDonald operators of, with alpha, of order alpha, and you can get the excited alpha n out of just acting with SL2Z on it. Okay. So this is an explanation of those operators. And then the nabla operator has also some nice properties. And in particular, the MacDonald polynomials are actually eigenfunctions of this nabla operator also, with some interesting eigenvalues. And in the combinatorial literature on MacDonald polynomials, actually this nabla operator is defined usually not on the basis of MacDonald polynomials, but on what's called modified MacDonald polynomials, so another version of them. Okay? And Cherenik introduced what is now called a super polynomial, which is precisely out of this data and out of this action of SL2Z on the generators of the double affine Hecker algebra, create some refined torus. Not invariants. Okay, so there are a few useful properties of this d alpha n. So in particular, the d1n, so for just one, the elementary symmetric function e1, so that's the sum of the y operators, right? But now in this n excitation, they have nice commutation with power sum operators, which are defined in terms of x's, right? Power sums. And you see that the power sums act on these guys as shift operators in the n variable. So if you think of n, I will ask you to think of n as a discrete time later. This is really a shift operator in time with a certain certain weight here, which depends on k. So the p1, if you want, is the most fundamental one and will be just the translation operator in discrete time. Okay. Now there is a whole theory of symmetric functions which uses the notion of platism. So I don't know if any of you is familiar with that, but okay, so these words might be cryptic to many of you, but this is expressing exactly a platistic relation between the power sums and the generating functions for these generalized MacDonald operators. Okay. So the limit that we are going to be interested in is the limit t going to infinity. So I believe it has a name. It's called Q-Whitaker limit, I think. And in that limit, for instance, the MacDonald polynomials go over to Q-Whitaker functions. Okay? So in that limit, provided you multiply by the correct power of t or theta, our original operators, you will find some new operators here, and here is the expression. So you got rid of a t factor, and you end up with just a sum like this. Okay, so again, compared to the original t going to infinity limit in the original MacDonald operator, you have inserted this excitation xi to the n. Okay, so these guys are extremely special because they obey some other algebra. It's like taking now a quotient, and they obey a much smaller algebra, if you want, relations, which are actually forming a cluster algebra. Okay, so I want to say a few words about that. So what's a cluster algebra? So I've tried to do the simplest possible picture of a cluster algebra. So a cluster algebra is made of clusters, and inside each cluster you have variables. Okay? Now, in a quantum cluster algebra, which is really what we are going to look at, those variables have definite commutation relations. So essentially, Q commutation relations, that is A times B is some power of Q, B times A, okay, which is dictated by the precise cluster algebra you're looking at. So inside each of those blobs, there are Q commutations between variables. And now you go from one blob to another via mutations. And a mutation does the following. It leaves all the variables invariant except one, which it mutates. Now, the mutated version of this old variable doesn't have to have nice commutation relations with the rest of the variables you started from, actually. So you need a new set now, which drops these old variables and includes the new variable, which now, again, will have nice commutation relations. Okay, so you can think actually of a cluster algebra as a sort of dynamical system which can evolve by mutations. And the collections of variables that you get in this way have some really nice properties. And the fundamental property here is the Laurent phenomenon, is that these mutations of variables are such that whenever you want to express the variables in a given cluster very far away, very remotely evolved, in terms of any cluster anywhere, they will be expressed as Laurent polynomials. Okay? So now my point here is that our generalized excited MacDonald operators in the Kiu-Whitaker limit, they actually form clusters in a cluster algebra. Okay? So here it is. The generalized MacDonald operators in the Kiu-Whitaker limit satisfy these relations. So the first relation is exactly the cluster condition of commutation of variables. Now my variables are themselves operators, right? But they satisfy these Q commutation conditions. And now, when do you decide that variables are within the same cluster? Well, you have to have a condition like this, right? So the index of excitation should not be too different compared to the index of order of the operator. Okay, so these are my clusters. And now this is a mutation. So it allows to take one of the guys within a cluster into a new guy as a function of other guys in the same cluster as this one, right? And so it defines for you how to mutate to the next cluster. Okay, so these operators actually can be thought of as variables in a cluster algebra. And there's a few additional conditions here, which is just saying that we are talking about a case with r plus one variables. So there's a vanishing condition. And as a consequence of this relation, there's also some nice simple formula for the last operator, which you can also get from just the definition I gave. Okay, so here is an example, just to make things clear. So my operator M1n is just Mn. There's only alpha equals 1, r equals 1. So there's only two variables, SL2. And it's just this divided difference operators in which this shifts the first variable by Q, and D2 shifts the second variable by Q. Okay, and you check easily that if F is a polynomial, then this ratio is still a polynomial of degree n more. Okay, now there are two relations between these operators, which you can check on a corner of the table, very easy, is that two consecutive Q commute, and that you have this mutation relation between Mn minus 1 and Mn plus 1 as a function of Mn. So you have these relations. Okay, so now the second remark is that these relations actually form a very special kind of cluster algebra, which happens to be also a discrete integrable system in the discrete time variable n. So you think of n now as a time variable, and you see that the mutation was increasing n locally, essentially, right? So the mutation was really an evolution in time. And now as function of n, well, because of this formula, you can see that this is just a linear superposition of plane waves, right, of the form xi to vn, n being the time. And these coefficients, the only trick here is that those coefficients don't commute. Okay, so you have a sort of non-commuting version of linear superposition of plane waves. Okay, so here a bit of notation. I will note Mn without other index when the first index is 1. So another way of thinking of this integrability is the following. I'm defining Laurent monomials of these operators, so the xi's and the x's. So essentially, xi is a ratio, and x is a ratio of ratios, so it's a cross ratio, right? But it's non-commutative, so non-commutative cross ratio of difference operators. So you have to be a bit careful to define that. But assume you have done everything you had to do to define it. Consider the discrete shift operator acting on function of n by just shifting by 1. Okay, and then consider the following operator, which I call mu operator. Some people will recognize its structure, just like when you define W algebras. And so you just take the product of D minus these X variables here, which are cross ratios of my original MacDonald operators. And here is the theorem. The theorem is that this operator, which a priori depends on N, because everybody is evaluated at some time, actually doesn't depend on M. So in particular, when you send N to infinity, all these ratios tend to very simple values, which are just xi's, the x's we started from and we act on with our operators. And therefore, this operator can be expressed as just the coefficients of the operators are just the elementary symmetric functions. So the elementary symmetric functions are the conserved quantities in the discrete time evolution of this system of equations. But now, these elementary symmetric functions, I can express them in terms of those guys at time n. So I get some really interesting relations. So let me show you for SL2 the example. So this is just all the variables. Everything is expressed in terms of mn, right? So you have now only 2 factors in this Mura operator. You expand it, and you find here the relation. This is the important relation. It's telling you that the elementary symmetric function x1 plus x2 is just a sum of 2 monomials in these MacDonald operators. Okay? And so if you reduce things modulo the mutation relation of your algebra, you find that E1 should act, by multiplication it just acts on polynomials, right? Should act as this combination of this Laurent polynomial of the MacDonald operators. And so you can identify these 2 because of integrability, because of this is a conservation law. Okay, so now I come to the original problem we were trying to solve with Rinat, which is computed graded characters for particular tensor products which occur in integrable quantum spin chains, so generalized inhomogeneous integrable quantum spin chains. And so as we are dealing with a case SLM, it just amounts to looking at the tensor product of irreducible representations corresponding to rectangular Young diagrams. Okay, so these rectangles, they have two directions, right? Alpha and I. So in principle, they are indexed by two indices, and we are taking a bunch of tensor products of those with n alpha I fold tensor products, and then we take the product of all alphas from 1 to the rank of the algebra, and a bunch of those numbers. Okay, and now we look not just at the multiplicity of this tensor product on irreducible representation, but on a graded multiplicity, which uses a certain grading of this tensor product, which I have no time to explain. But I think it's easier to just show you this generating function. So you have a bunch of multiplicities. So these are just polynomials with coefficient, integer coefficients of Q. Right? And these multiplicities, I arrange them into a character, which is just generating function with sure functions as a revelator. And these guys are just given in terms of my generalized MacDonald operators, which act as creation operators on the trivial polynomial 1. Okay? So essentially, these graded characters, which had the definition quite involved in some other context, are actually expressed directly and simply in terms of these MacDonald operators in the limit Q Whittaker limit up to some power of Q here. Okay, so these are the objects that we are after, and we went essentially the other way, right, from page 29 to page 1, but the other way to understand what these guys were. First, define them, and understand them, and see that they had to do with this SL2Z action in the double affine Hecker algebra. Okay, so one way of looking at this object, see all the n's, these collections of integer n's, are really like the number of times any given rectangle appears. Okay, and so there's a way of putting this in the form of a collection of Young diagrams, y1, y2, up to yr, where r is the rank of the algebra. And now if you, so in the usual way, right, the n's are just the length of the steps in my Young diagrams. And then, of course, as the n's are also numbers of rectangles, I can put a third dimension, right, and give the extension of each of those n's by writing the rectangle corresponding to it. So the first diagram has thickness 1, the second thickness 2, and etc. The last diagram thickness r. And now you can put this guy all together into a plane partition. Okay. So one way of thinking of my states here, over which I will want to act. Okay. So here the states are constructed by these creation operators. But one way of thinking of those states is as plane partitions. Okay. So now here is another theorem, which is that these graded characters satisfy different equations of a form, some elementary symmetric function of the x's. So the x's were appearing here. I still called it z, but the z's are x's. And elementary symmetric functions of x's acting on my characters is a certain difference operator acting on the characters. So why is that? Well, just because of this form here, I know everything about these m's. We showed that the integrability allowed to prove that precisely each elementary symmetric function could be expressed as a Laurent polynomial in these difference operators. So now a Laurent polynomial in these difference operators is going to act on a product of difference operators by just shifting, right, by plus 1, minus 1. And so it's a difference operator acting now on the variable n, therefore on my plane partition. So I have, for free almost, from just the integrable structure of the algebras these guys come from, I get a difference equation for these characters. Okay, and so you can view these addition and subtraction of 1 to the various n's as, of course, moving boxes around in my plane partition, and you can think of this as a Hamiltonian. Okay, so here is an example, for instance, SL2. So I just rewrote what we got before. The chi n is just a product of m's. And then you can see that you can transform the action, this sort of Pierre rule for E1, into some difference operator acting on the n's. Here is another example, which is the symmetric power representation. So it's all the rectangles that are of width 1. Okay, so essentially the only representations we look at are these rows of boxes. So you have only one family of n's, nj. And so chi n is just the same product, but now these are all m1j, so I removed the 1. Okay, and here is now an explicit example of how to use the relations of a cluster algebra, right? So we have q commutation between two consecutive variables. That's one property. And the second property, I don't believe you remember it, it was a property that the power sums acted as shift operators in the time variable. So the first power sum is E1, and it acts as a time translation by 1 in the variable time variable J. So you use these two relations to compute this, right? So this is an elementary calculation, right? It acts by commutation. And so you get 1 minus qn times this term, right? And so now you're ready to act with E1 on this product. And you get the following. E1 acting on phi n is just the sum of terms like this, in which you add one and subtract one and position at two consecutive positions. So you can rewrite this as an operator which acts on the variables n by, well, essentially, a Q difference. It's a Q difference, a Q boson or TODA-like operator. And there is indeed a transformation of this operator to the TODA, Q difference TODA Hamiltonian, acting on these characters. So what we get here is that the characters are eigenfunctions of this TODA operator with eigenvalue E1. Okay. So now, very quickly, what is this n index, multi-index? So the nj's were the numbers of guys with one row. And so they corresponded in my state picture to y1, in fact. These are all the n's with one in superscript. So there is actually only one Young diagram in this case. And this operator, what does it do? It just adds up a small box on top of a rectangle of size I here, right? And so it, as a consequence, it shifts the guys by the corresponding values, but also it inserts a weight, which is 1 minus q to the ni, which is very familiar to you. Okay, so my last topic is the connection to yet another algebra, and has to do with now the full QT deformation. So here we had only a Q deformation and we had sent T to infinity. And now I'm trying to see what happens in the full QT picture. Okay. And so the reason, the place where this elliptic whole algebra came from is really multiplication rules for classes in equivariant K-theory of certain varieties, which I have no time to explain. So I'll just explain about generators and relations again. Okay? So the generators are indexed by two integers, right, u, a, b. We have two parameters, q and t. These are some parameters alpha k depending on q and t. Okay? And here are the main relations. So first of all, generators u, c, d, and u, a, b commute whenever AB and CD are on the same ray originating from the origin. Okay? So whenever two pairs of indices are on the same ray, the corresponding generators will commute. Okay? That's the first relation. Second relation is if they are not aligned, then you have a well-defined triangle formed by the origin, the first point, and the second point. And if this triangle is quasi-empty, that is, it has no interior integer points, then you have a certain relation in which the indices are additive. So it's A plus C, B plus D. But notice this is not a U. This is a theta. It's another type of generator. Because it can happen that these two indices now are no longer coprime, are not coprime. Okay? And if these two indices are not coprime, then I have to transform back to the U's by using this transformation. Okay, so the thetas are polynomials of a U's, and so I can put here a polynomial of a U's, but not a U itself. So it's rather complicated relations. Okay, so why at all bother with this thing? Well, let me show you examples. So this is an empty triangle, right? And so it has two sides, 1, 1, and 2, 0, and it allows by commutation to get U3, 1. U3, 1 is U1, 1 commutator with U2, 0. Okay, fine. This one is a little bit more tricky because 2, 2 is not coprime, right? So the commutation of u1, 2 and u1, 0 is going to give you theta 2, 2. And then theta 2, 2, you will have to express the generating series of a theta nn in terms of a generating series of a unn with coefficients. And you get, therefore, that theta 2, 2 is expressed in terms of two u's, not just one. Okay, so this is this algebra. Okay, so isomorphisms, it has been established that the spherical Daha is actually isomorphic to the elliptic whole algebra, so with Q and T, both parameters Q and T. Okay, and then there's a surjective homomorphism of the elliptic whole algebra over the spherical Daha with finite number of variables. This was in the limit of infinite number of variables. Okay, so there is a subtlety with that. The way it works is quite simple, is that the power sums for the x's are u0k, and the power sums for y's are uk0, right? So these are the two axes. the horizontal axis is the y's, and the vertical axis is the x's. Okay? Now, here are where our generalized MacDonald operators appear. They're actually the U1k in this surjective automorphism, homomorphism. And so there's a very simple proof which is here of this fact. But the second thing, which is also very interesting, is that the SL2Z action that we had in double affine Hecker algebra is going to also be present in the elliptical algebra, and it will essentially act on the pairs of indices A and B. So you can really think of these A's and B's as homologies with respect to the torus, right, with A and B cycles. So the proof of this fact is very simple. Because of the commutation relations of the algebra with this rule of empty triangles, you can identify E1, right, by the previous slide, and compute the commutator of E1 with this guy and see that it's the next. And so therefore, you can show that the D1k are exactly the guys on the first column after the y-axis. Okay? So here is a more general picture. So this contains all the elementary symmetric functions of X, right? Anything, any symmetric polynomials in X are combinations of those generators. Here, these are the symmetric functions of Y's, so the power sums, more precisely, and here the power sums. Our generalized MacDonald operators, D1n, are on this column here. And what happens is that, of course, these power sums of y's are not directly the MacDonald operators, but they're related to them, again, by some exponential generating function, right? So the MacDonald operators are actually polynomials of the power sums in the y operators, okay? And so and now what you can do is, of course, act with the SL2Z on these guys, or these guys, to generate other terms in this grid, and that's how you will get to the d alpha n. So we can really view the d alpha n as being part of this picture by iterated action using the SL2Z natural action of elliptical algebra now. Okay, so what good is this? Well, this is good for us because it provides us almost for free with some deformation of the quantum cluster algebra relation. So let me recall the quantum cluster, first quantum cluster algebra relation that we had was something like this. Okay? And now we have a deformation of that in which instead of having a product of mn plus 1 and mn minus 1, we have a commutator here. The square is still there, and the 2n is still there, but now we have factors which depend on q and t. Okay? And the way you derive this sort of relation is just by using the ordinary commutation relations in the elliptical algebra, but with non-coprime indices. So you have to be a little careful, right? Because 1n plus 1 plus 1n minus 1 is 2n, and therefore non-coprime. So you have to make a little change. And that's responsible for this difference, right? The fact that you have not just a commutator, but more terms. Okay? So another consequence of this connection to elliptical algebra is the fact that you can write down some compact formulas for these generalized excited MacDonald operators, simply constant terms involving the D1n current. So current is just a name for a generating function which goes from minus infinity to plus infinity. Okay? So you use those currents in a constant term formula with this type of prefactor to get the other guys. Okay, and so the previous relation can be actually derived from this with 2, with only alpha equals 2 in here. So D1 is the operator with degree 1, right? So maybe I can just write it down for you. So D1n is just the sum I equals 1 to r plus 1 of xi to the n, product j different from I, theta xi minus theta inverse xj over xi minus xj times the shift operator in the I variable. Okay, so it's the first order MacDonald operator, but now excited, right, with this insertion of x to the n. Okay? T is theta squared, sorry. Di changes xi into qxi, and theta squared equals t. So the q and t are there in this way. Sorry, t.
The question was about t u1, comma u alpha. Well, you had the coefficient. So
maybe t. Next. Oh, okay.
Yeah. You have c and then t.
No. Ct means constant term. Sorry. Oh. Ct is a classical notation for constant term. So it means you have a certain expression of variables u1, u alpha. You're supposed to expand them as Laurent series, and you pick up the power zero coefficient. Huh? So this is a rather involved relation, but there are ways of dealing with it which allow to actually compute things. So I wanted to show here the Q Whittaker limit, t going to infinity, of this relation. And it gives you a very remarkably simple relation between the order alpha excited MacDonald operator and the order one ones, okay, as what I call a quantum determinant. And here you recognize some function which is quite common, which is this Q deformed van der Monde determinant. So you just insert a Q-deformed van der Monde determinant in the product of those guys, and so it gives you immediately some explicit formulas for the higher order MacDonald operators in terms of the first order MacDonald operator, and I can take this as definition of quantum determinant. As you notice, quantum determinant here is still okay. I see mn times mn minus q mn plus 1 mn minus 1. So I think of it as a determinant a little bit deformed. But if you look here, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 terms, right? So it's a bit more than 6. And when q equals 1, this term goes away. You see, so when q equals 1, it's a good determinant. When q is not equal to 1, it's a bit difficult to call it really a determinant. But the remarkable fact is that these formulas coincide with the formulas derived by Gelfand and Retak for quasi-determinants. So it's a notion of determinant for completely non-commuting variables. And their formulas coincide in this particular case. Okay? So it's almost done. This is a summary of this random walk I took you through. So we started in Daha with this SL2Z action. Then we introduced the MacDonald operators and their generalizations. In the T going to infinity Whittaker limit, we had these degenerate generalized MacDonald operators, depending on Q only this time. They obeyed this cluster algebra relation with this magical Laurent property, which allows to consider Laurent polynomials of those operators and use them, and in particular use the discrete integrability of this particular cluster algebra with certain conservation law to find quantum Hamiltonians, which are actually difference operators, of which graded characters are eigenfunctions. Okay, and then the connection to elliptic whole algebra here is just by an isomorphism or surjective homomorphism. You can use these generalized MacDonald operators and find them somewhere inside this elliptic whole algebra. And the question that remains is, of course, is there a version of all this which is QT deformed? So therefore, there would be some QT deformation of this cluster algebra, and maybe also what remains of this discrete integrability in this case. So this was like the big picture, but there's a bigger picture, and I think I will conclude with this. So I'm not even going to comment on it. I just give it just a picture. Okay, thank you.
So, Jan. So is there a non-symmetric theory that goes behind
okay,
this?
Okay, so there's definitely a non-symmetric theory of MacDonald polynomials within Daha due to Cherenik, and which turned out to be extremely powerful. So the idea is very simple, is instead of working in the spherical Daha, which acts on symmetric polynomials, you work directly with the Ys individually, and you find a family of polynomials which are eigenfunctions, common eigenfunctions to all the Ys. Okay, and these are these non-symmetric MacDonald polynomials. So there is definitely a theory of that. In our context, it doesn't seem to be necessary because we are already looking at symmetric functions, these graded characters. Okay, so but I think you can certainly go through all those steps in pretty much the same way. Now, in connection with elliptic whole algebra. I'm not sure, because the elliptical algebra is really isomorphic to the spherical Daha that is acting on symmetric polynomials. So I don't think, well, maybe this would have to be defined, right? What you mean, maybe there's another structure here which one can come up with which is adapted to discussing non-symmetric polynomials. I don't know.
More questions?
So with this, with the help of this algebra, you can access Q-deformed Calogero, this kind of things. Right?
Well, yes. So we have this. I didn't really describe them in much detail. Rinat will tell you more about this. We have these quantum Hamiltonians here, which are sort of generalized Q-toda difference operators, right? And they are acting on these objects, which are these graded characters. So some of the objects are known, like if you restrict n to some particular subsets, then these guys become really Whittaker functions, for instance. And then in the case of Whittaker functions, Q Whittaker functions, we know that they are eigenfunctions of Q difference toda equation, right? So that's a particular case. But this is more general, right? And so there are. Not much is known. We're still. For H, well, these guys certainly are eigenfunctions with eigenvalues, which are these elementary symmetric functions. Or in fact, you can build up eigenfunctions for any complete symmetric functions as well.
So the spectrum is known.
Well, yes. In this case, yes. Well, not just the spectrum. We know the eigenfunctions, right? Yeah, actually, there's another way of thinking of it. You can view this as a sort of Bethe-Ansatz, algebraic Bethe-Ansatz solution in which you act with creation operators on the vacuum, which is this polynomial one, right? So in a sense, we start from the answer and we get to the question, right?
And the degeneracy, various states are degenerate.
Ah.
Some degeneracy.
So for Whittaker functions, it's known. For Q toda, but in general, I don't know.
There is another question here. So you say these graded characters are eigenfunctions of the Q toda system, right?
Not all of them, but in a particular case, which would correspond. You see, I had this picture of states. Maybe I should show this picture of states again. Right. So in this picture of states, you have the Q toda is when you consider only the n ones. So you take n1, n2, n12, n1n, and you form a Young diagram out of them. Okay, and that is going to be a particular case, right, in which you only retain the first index. Okay, and those guys indexed by Young diagrams. Okay, are going to be Q Whittaker functions, which are eigenfunctions of Q difference toda Hamiltonian.
And they are all Q Whittaker functions?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
So they are what is called type 1, or class 1, which is the type one observes in these problems of hopping particles, actually.
So then your character coincides with
but you see, McDonald's so problem. You have the original Whittaker functions have arguments which are complex numbers, right? And here the arguments are integers.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so you, yeah.
Okay.
More question? If not, let's thank Philippe again.